doing and all that stuff.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call to order the Senate Committee on Healthcare, Human Services, and Rural Health Policy. It's February 15th, the day after Valentine's Day, and we only have two bills today, and I would like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4009. And we have Holly Mercer from the Board of Nursing, and then Brian Bollinger, if you'd come up too. Holly, or Committee Administrator, would you describe the bill to us?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 4009, A engrossed, is eliminating the monitoring entity from the Impaired Professional Health Professional Program. It requires that the program to report the professional's participation in the program and noncompliance with the program directly to the professional's licensing board if that professional is referred to the program by the board. I know a lot of professionals in that sentence. Declares an emergency effective on passage. You also have a fiscal impact statement that just basically outlines all of the details of the bill, but in essence, it saves the money. It's anticipated that of the $180,000 other funds that was allocated in the 2013 legislatively approved budget, that $90,000 of it will be saved.
Holly, would you like to start the testimony, please?
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me okay, Senator?
Oh, loud and clear, yes.
Okay. Chairwoman Anderson and members of the committee, my name is Holly Mercer. I'm Executive Director of the Board of Nursing. Thank you for allowing me to testify via phone today. Our board is currently in session, so I've just taken a few moments out of that board meeting. This bill is actually coming to you as a result of a court decision in Multnomah County, which reflected a decision that a structure that we put into the health professional monitoring program is no longer working or valid. So based on that court decision, we learned that a self-referred licensee who revokes their consent to give information to the board, the court said that if they are self-referred and revoke their consent, the board may not know that licensee's name under federal law. So the reason that we put in this structure for this third-party monitoring entity no longer works. It saves approximately $180,000 for all of the four boards involved. That includes medical, dental, pharmacy, and nursing. And just for the Board of Nursing, it's going to save us around $115,000 a biennium. It also is a kind of a regulatory streamlining bill because we no longer have to go through this third-party monitoring entity to get information for our board-referred licensees. So the detail I've tried to put into the testimony, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you have around this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Holly. Go ahead, Brian.
Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Behringer. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association, and I am here, I think, just to explain the small amendment that we included in on the House side. First, let me say that we agree with everything Ms. Mercer said. This is a great bill as far as eliminating the entity after it's been deemed not to do what we thought it would do, and it will save us some money. But in eliminating that entity, if you see on page 4 of the bill, we repealed 676-195, which included the entity, but I think inadvertently also eliminated some important confidentiality protections that self-referrals have. And so the amendment we placed in on the House side restored those provisions that you can see on page 2, line 16, and then on page 3, line 19. Those were existing confidentiality provisions in law that were accidentally taken out with the repealing of the entity, the monitoring entity, and we've just restored them. But we support this bill, absolutely.
There appears to be no opposition. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I opposed doing this when we did it. I'm glad we're repealing it.
I know. I was not happy when we did it before either. I thought after the first year, after I saw how much money it was costing the Board of Nursing in particular, I was shocked. It actually saved.
Madam Chair, we took something that was really working and screwed it all up, so now we can put it back the way it should be.
All right, yes, Senator Morris.
Yeah.
The policy issue is, should they be protected when they're self-referred, or should the licensing agency have knowledge of the self-referral. That's the basic policy question.
Is that correct, Holly?
I didn't hear the question, Chair Mona Sanderson.
Okay.
The basic policy question before us is, when you have a self-referral, should that be protected from the licensing agency? And I'm wondering what would be the effect if you didn't have that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Morse, this bill actually, the court case was very telling in that we thought this structure would work because the boards that, all the boards are mandated to accept self-referrals. And I think on my testimony, if you have that testimony in front of you, I kind of spell out how the breakdown is in for each board as to the number of self-referrals. When the Board of Nursing looked and we sat around the table putting the program together, some of the boards were concerned that if a self-referral revoked their consent, we would have no way, and there was a non-compliance issue, we would have no way of knowing who they were. And we think that based on the way the bill is now, self-referrals do have confidentiality protections. At some level, that worries our board because if they are non-compliant, we feel that it might be a public safety issue. We intend to have a discussion among the four boards and with the associations before the concepts are put together for 2013 around this issue. Because you are exactly right. Self-referred licensees are not known to the board. And even if they are non-compliant, if they revoke their consent, they're still not going to be known to the board. So we think we need to have some robust discussion around that, and I'm going to seek direction from our board actually tomorrow on whether we can kind of move that a concept forward to maybe allow the boards to decide if they want to opt in to have self-referrals or not. We've got several fixes that we need to make on this program in 2013, and we will definitely be back before you.
Well, Madam Chair, doesn't page 3, line 19 and 20 contravene the testimony that we just received?
Page 3, the program may not, we're referring, Holly, to page 3, line 19, the program may not report to a self-referred licensee's enrollment in or successful completion of the program to the licensee's board.
Correct.
Madam Chair.
I believe that's... No, the self-referreds are confidential to the board.
And Brian's here to speak to that, too, Holly.
Madam Chair, let me take a stab at Senator Morse's question, because I think the policy question before the committee in this bill is removing the monitoring entity. In doing that in the original draft of the bill, they had inadvertently removed confidentiality protections that currently exist in statute today. So that was the policy of the state, was that what's in line 19 and what was in line on page 3 and what is in line 16 on page 2 was currently in the bill but was unfortunately repealed in addition with the monitoring entity when on page 4 we repealed 676.195. So that is not a policy change from what's current law. In my opinion, the policy change that is before the committee is to remove the monitoring entity, which is what Ms. Mercer testified to will be saving the money. But the confidentiality of the self-reporting licensees was current law, was inadvertently removed. We've amended it to put it back in, and so it's would just maintain the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as a policy issue, Madam Chair, if you have someone that enrolls in a drug and addiction program and they're in a critical skill area, and they're not completing that program, shouldn't the licensing board be aware of that?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, that I think speaks to the original issue Ms. Mercer brought up, is that there are some ongoing discussions about how things that need to be tweaked and moved on. But I just wanted to clarify for the issue of this bill, it's current law, we want to maintain current law, and then we will be having these ongoing discussions.
It looks like they're going to be, according to Ms. Mercer, that they will be bringing this issue before their board, and then not sure what they'll be bringing to us.
I think that's good. The discussion started out about saving money. That isn't the purpose of this bill. It's patient safety and professional integrity, as I see it. So,
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, but I want to be clear that these provisions are in current law. That is the way it is right now. And in removing the monitoring entity, they were inadvertently removed in the original draft of this legislation. We were just restoring those provisions to current law. So it's not a new policy direction beyond removing the monitoring entity. But
what Senator Morse is saying is that shouldn't the board be aware of someone who has self-referred and may be endangering patients?
And is non-compliant in a rehabilitation program.
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Cruz.
Before we messed this all up, back when the boards each were in control of their own program, was this, if the self-referring, was that information confidential at that point, or did the boards know who those people were?
I don't know the
Chair
answer.
Bonus Anderson,
yes.
This is Holly. I think I can respond to that.
Okay.
When all the boards, the four boards that are involved in this program, we actually had very inconsistent ways of dealing with our licensees. And the reason that we put the new program together was to have a more consistent program. Now, what we've learned over time is that it's very difficult with the different types of practices involved to have all the consistency that the statute tried to arrive at. Now, for example, the medical board had, I would say, they actually said they did have a treatment program in their prior program, and they had a more robust self-referred kind of number of licensees, and you can see that on the grid. About half of their current participants are self-referred. Mm-hmm. The other boards involved, we had very few self-referred, so most of our licensees were coming through the board on a complaint process. And you know, the bill that we put together, House Bill 2345, was a compromise, and we actually did spend a lot of time trying to figure out how we could get the name of those licensees that are self-referred when they're non-compliant. And we thought we had a structure in place. The structure did not work. And so if a licensee is self-referred and they are non-compliant and they revoke their consent, the courts have said that it is not permissible to give that name to the board. And so we just need to get back, you know, to the table, I think, with the boards involved, and figure out how to protect the public, which is your point. But it is a public safety issue.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess knowing something about addicts, having been one myself, they can play games better than anybody else, and I guess I can, Senator Morse's point, if you think you're in trouble, you self-refer and avoid the trouble and then play the game, potentially. So I do think this is something that probably needs to be vetted in a fuller way, because I think Senator Morse has a very valid point. And what I'm not understanding in all of this, like the medical board has their own program, so, or they used to. So one would assume if they were self-reporting or going into that program, how would they not know who they were? But, or could they just self-report anonymously and say they're going to some program and you have no idea what it is, because there's programs and there's programs.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Bates?
Yeah, I'll try to bring a little reality in this, because I was involved for many years with monitoring physicians who had self-reported and some who had not self-reported. And I would guess about half of the physicians in the program self-reported and about half didn't. I think those numbers are probably, I don't know what it is now, but we would never have known about half of the people who had a drug or an alcohol problem and hadn't reported themselves. And the reason they did report themselves was they knew they were anonymous. And the vast majority of them completed their program, stayed in their programs, and were monitored. The real, if you don't keep it that way, people aren't going to self-report, and you're going to miss half of them out there, okay? That's why when you look at the numbers here, you know, the numbers for nurses is extremely low compared to the number of sides. There's 70,000 nurses out there, roughly, and there's hardly anybody here, and there's 5,000 versus 7,000 doctors. Look how many people are there. And I would tell you that the addiction problems are no different for doctors or nurses of a significant nature, okay? So what it tells you is there's got to be a bunch of nurses out there that are in trouble and they're not reporting. And there's maybe lots of reasons for that, but they aren't. So you want something that says, you want a policy that says, one, if you self-report, you get some value for doing that. Mm-hmm. If you don't complete your program, there's got to be some way of catching that and dealing with that too.
And
the way it was, used to be, if I remember right, and everything got changed here, so I may be wrong what I'm going to say. If they didn't do what they're supposed to be doing in their program, they weren't reported to the board, but it came back to them in our places. It came back at their hospital privilege level. The hospitals were notified, and that's how I found about a couple of cases, and we started monitoring those people right in the hospital, but with random bloods. But there's got to be some way of getting there. The other issue involved this, I seem to remember, and I may be wrong about this, there's a federal law involved here too. And my memory of it was vague, but there was some federal law that said you, when someone self-reports and is anonymous and wants to stay anonymous, that the feds somehow protect them in that. And maybe somebody else knows more about that than I do, but I remember that vaguely as one of our stumbling blocks trying to deal with this.
Okay.
Is that, can anyone bring that forward to us? Some kind of a federal statute or something? I don't remember all of it.
Well, we would like, the committee would like to have this clarified. I don't think the underlying bill is a problem, but it looks like you will be coming back in 2013 to address this particular issue. Because we did have a problem, as you remember, all of the articles that were written about the nurses, we don't want that to happen again, and so...
Madam Chair,
yes.
We'd be happy to bring back some clarification. I'm noting here, just in my quick reading on line 19 of page 1, that there is an opportunity for substantial noncompliance to be reported to the licensee's board, but what I'm not positive about is how that is from self-referrals to the others, and that's the clarification that I can go and bring back to you.
And maybe said about the federal law, if there's one there.
I
may be totally wrong. I can't remember that for sure.
All right. Any other discussion? All right. I would like to close the public hearing on House Bill 4009 and open a work session on House Bill 4009.
Chair, I move House Bill 4009. Engrossed to the floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4009A engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chairwoman Sanderson?
Aye. Motion carries.
And
Senator
Cruz?
Sure.
Yeah, Senator Cruz will carry the bill. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 4008. Madam Administrator, would you let us know?
Polly?
Yes.
You can go now.
Okay, thanks, Sandy.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you,
bye.
Polly.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 4008 is a technical bill requested by the Oregon Medical Imaging Board. It modifies the requirements for licensure by the Board of Medical Imaging. There are several changes that I believe the executive director would like to address with the committee. This left the House floor with 57 ayes.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Ed Conlow. I'm the executive director of the Board of Medical Imaging. House Bill 4008 is corrective legislation, makes some minor adjustments to the 2009 legislation that expanded and enhanced Oregon's licensure requirements for medical imaging professionals. This allows the board to continue to renew the licenses of a small number of provisional license holders, as well as a small number of older licensees who will not be able to qualify for the national credential that is required after 2014. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Any discussion?
Okay.
While you're here, I do want to bring to your attention, I have received an email from a radiologist and medical director of an imaging, and he's very concerned about the self-referrals that are happening, and they were he was writing that we would consider eliminating self-referrals, and he was referring to a situation where a solitary treating physician, or more commonly a group of treating physicians, purchase their own imaging equipment and then refer their own patients to that equipment and then collect the payment for that imaging test. And in the past, this has been acceptable when self-referral was limited to in-office x-rays or other relatively low-cost studies, but over the past 20 years, the growth of MRI and CT, both highly reimbursed, they are both highly reimbursed exams. These expensive types of scanners are now being purchased by referring groups with the intent to capture that reimbursement. Has that problem been brought to your attention at all?
Madam Chair, not specifically, I don't think. I mean, we cannot regulate physicians, so.
Let me tell you what, I just walked into the conversation, but I've tried, and it don't work.
We have had some discussions about the availability of ultrasound devices. A private citizen can purchase an ultrasound machine and set up a shop and start doing scans for keepsake videos and stuff like that. The board would like to discuss some legislation in 2013 to control that. But we haven't had any discussions about anything going on in physicians' offices specifically.
Well, he has seen his business go down dramatically, of course. And he said that the self-referral clearly drives up medical costs by promoting and rewarding, because it's highly reimbursable, overutilization of medical imaging. And so I think this is a topic that I'd like to talk about. This isn't pertinent necessarily to this bill, but I figured I'd have you here, and if we could get on the record from you that this has not been a topic that your board has really considered. Anyway, he really feels that there's some unnecessary patient radiation exposure and is very, very concerned. Of course, his economic interests are at stake here also, and so we will probably have a conversation in 2013. I just wanted to know if you had any complaints, but you have not.
And I've only been here in this job for a little while, so it could have been something that came up before I got here, but I'd be happy to follow up if you'd like.
Okay. I think I might forward this to you, as well as to some insurance companies, et cetera. Yeah. Senator Morse, and then Senator Shields.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I, in the context of this discussion, I continually hear reference to the Stark laws, federal Stark laws, that prohibit these self-referrals.
What is it called?
The Stark
laws.
Laws. Oh. They're federal regulations that prohibit physicians referring to their own self-interested diagnostics or whatever it may be, labs. And I'm wondering how this happens in the context of those laws, or if they even have any teeth.
They probably don't, from what this, my staff's been trying to work and get some information on it, and we've been...
Senator Bates.
Senator Shields.
My understanding is that there are certain exemptions from Stark laws that you can drive a truck through, and... So I think part of my concern about the argument about defensive medicine and the studies that were put forward is that they argued that a big part of defensive medicine was based on ordering medical imaging that wasn't necessary. Mm-hmm. The question that comes from that, in my view, is why? Why are they doing it? Are they doing it just because to protect their liability, or could there be another reason? Perhaps they own the imaging machine. And I do think it is an important topic, and there does certainly seem to be in the literature a fair amount of evidence, a lot of evidence, that says if you own the imaging machine, you're more likely to order imaging tests than if you don't. The other part, I think, I got this email too. The person was getting at is, and this was, I think, Epic Imaging in East County, and they felt like they were a standalone company, and the big hospital systems were basically stiff-arming them and going, and particularly if they were associated with insurance companies, they were not allowing their physicians or their other providers to use these guys, and instead were self-referring to their own hospital system. I think that was the issue, and if they own an insurance company too. So,
Senator Bates.
The Stark laws were written by Senator Stark, I think he's from California if I remember right, to prevent physicians from churning patients through labs, x-rays, and CT scanners, MRIs, to make money. And at one point, back probably in the 80s and 90s, or these first laws were written, it was really almost a crime what was being done. And only a few physicians were doing it, but it made everybody look bad. There are times when it's appropriate for physicians to own certain labs and equipment, mainly just in their own office, simple x-rays for fractures and whatnot, and simple machines for chem screens, CBCs, I don't know what those things are. But when you start getting into CT scanners and MRI machines, it becomes somewhat questionable. And the way the Stark laws are set up, you'll find if you have 20 or 30 physicians in a group that want to buy an MRI machine and use it because they can't get on the hospital one or they can't get on the other one, which seems unlikely in this day and age, let's say they can't. It's very, very carefully written law says you can't enumerate or give money to one physician. This is the base of the Stark laws. If you have 20 physicians using the machine and one of them uses 50% of the time, one 25% of the time, one 1% of the time, you can't pay them any profit off that based on how much they use the machine. They have to be paid in total. And that's the basic of the Stark laws, trying to keep people from churning through machines and exposing patients to radiation they don't need and exposing their pocketbooks, insurance pocketbooks, to things they don't need to. But there's also been some studies, and you think of McClellan, Texas, and Grand Junction, Colorado, where McClellan has a whole ton of these machines sitting around, owned primarily, I understand, by physicians, and Grand Junction didn't do that, and the difference in cost in those two places is hugely different, and that is probably one of the big drivers. And I think Senator Shields knows about it. So it is going to be something we should be talking about. It's pretty tricky stuff. There's good and bad on both sides, and there's plenty of room for abuse. And as an example, my own group, we had a vote whether or not the 50 of us were going to buy an MRI machine. The vote was 49-1.
You were the one.
Well, I was the one who said no. But ultimately, well, in the end, I talked him out of it. Okay. We did not. I just felt it was unnecessary. We had 10 machines in town or so. What do we need another one for? Why are we really doing this? Do you have trouble getting your patients on the machine or not? Well, not really. Then why are we doing this? They all looked kind of sheepishly at themselves and said no. Okay.
Well, so, good. I'm glad to. to be enlightened on this subject because my staff's been working really hard with EPIC and trying to sort out. And then we started getting into the federal law and didn't know it was called Stark. Mm-hmm. But
I live with it every day, trust me.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on this bill? Okay, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 4008 and open a work session on House Bill 4008.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 4008 to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 4008 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to say we've had very good discussion here today on both bills. Fortunately, the discussion we had had nothing to do with the bills.
Any further discussion? Clerk will call.
Madam Chair, we'll probably have, before the session's over, we'll have a lot more of this kind of discussion.
Yeah, that's right.
Philosophical initiative.
Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Monahan?
Aye. Motion carries. Who would like to carry this bill?
Alan Wood.
I'll carry it.
Chip Senator Shields will carry this bill. And colleagues, so far, we don't have any more bills referred. Evidently, we have a possibility of having two bills referred. So far, none of the Human Services Committee bills have been referred. So, tentatively, I'd like to say we will not have a meeting Friday, because even if we get one or two, we can do a Monday. So stay tuned.
The audience.
Friday afternoon. Okay, with that, we're adjourned.
Those don't count.